A Thought for Your Penny is hosted by Shauna and Squeaky and explores ways to save money and tips to avoid scams, all while they share their own stories along the way. Get in touch by calling 970-425-3060 or emailing penniespod@gmail.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to A Thought for Your Pennies. This is your host, Shauna, with Squeaky.
Hey, I'm Squeaky, and I wear dark sunglasses to podcast.
Amazing. Your future is so bright, Squeaky. Today, we're going to be talking about cars in our savings and scam segment, which is really important for me because when you're raising a family, one thing you have to think about, how am I going to get these kids cars in our U.S. car-centric culture and how do you afford all that? So we'll get into that. But before we do, I wanted to share some stories about the cars I had when I was a youngin', and I'm sure you've got some great car stories too.
You just presume. We haven't planned anything. You're just like, I don't know. I don't know if Squeaky drives, right? I cartwheel to work. You don't know.
Well, I think we mentioned the tiers of duct tape that are on your current car. Like, there's the expensive duct tape, and then there's cheap duct tape, and then there's whatever is on your car, which is the primo stuff, right? Like, the caviar of duct tape.
They upgrade, like, through the different animals. There's, like, duck brand duct tape,
okay,
right? And then there's the gorilla brand duct tape.
Okay.
And there's, like, the crazy imported Japanese stuff that holds my mirror on and holds my front left fender on. And the special metal industrial zip ties I got from the dealership for holding my fender in one piece.
Wow.
My Hyundai Elantra is super old. It's like from 2012, and I've been beating the crap out of it. It's gone from here to California, from here to Salt Lake City two or three times. And you remember that big storm we had when the polar vortex broke, right? I just straight rammed a couple walls of ice with it. Thing is indestructible. I love it.
That's great. Yeah.
It's been paid off the whole time, too.
You should write a book about that, Squeaky. I'm sure you'll have many people coming to your financial seminars. So, yeah, the first car I ever had, my dad did provide. It was my older stepsister's car. It was a 1988 Plymouth Reliant K. So it was a very square. It was white. And I ended up calling it the 20-minute car because it took 20 minutes to warm up. Like, if you didn't let it warm up for 20 minutes, it didn't go anywhere. And then once it was going, it would only go for 20 minutes, and then it would just stall out and die.
This is the car they would put in, like, bad cop movies when they want you to know they have a bad car.
Yeah. Yeah.
The
Reliant K reputation of being an awful, awful car definitely lived up to that.
Is Reliant in name only?
Well, and then the other thing about the 20-minute car is that after it died, you couldn't start it again for another 20 minutes. So my dad replaced the water pump in it, and it was unnecessarily complicated, so he had to mess with the timing chain in order to replace the pump. So when I was at green lights and I would press the gas, it would take about 5 seconds before the car would actually go. So I got honked at all the time. That car did not last long.
We had very different first cars.
What was your first car?
1986, cherry red, 300 horsepower, V8, Chevy Camaro. I gave it to my brother.
Okay. Well, all my cars have names. And so the first car was the 20-minute car.
Nice and name.
Then the second car I had was called the Old Man because it was an 82 Oldsmobile that was fully loaded luxury car back in the day. It had a red velvet interior, automatic windows, very, very smooth drive. Drove that for a few months before it fired a rod into the oil pan, and apparently you can't recover from that.
My dad had a very different Oldsmobile. It was just the most terrible car ever. Everything about it broke. He traded it for a pizza and they got ripped off.
Okay, so he traded a car for a pizza?
We have to backtrack for the full story.
Okay. All right.
This was an 86 Oldsmobile Calais, right? So the Cutlass Supreme was their high-end one. This was some of the features. It was right after body, so it looked like crap, but whatever. My dad liked it. It was his car, right?
Okay.
So he kept it, and he did this thing. He was like, I paid it off. I'm keeping this. Same thing I'm doing with my Elantra. But I know my car's junk. He loved it. The roof was falling down. He was at like 150,000 miles, and this car was supposed to be like, you know, 80, 60 was like the limit for, because old cars didn't last.
Mm-hmm.
The blinker knob broke. The shifter didn't work. You couldn't put it in the low gears, right? The mileage was going to crap. The fuel gauge stopped working, so he started running out of gas, and he'd fill it with gasoline antifreeze, just enough to get the engine started and get to the next gas station?
I've never heard of that trick.
It works. It works. I mean, and destroys the engine, apparently.
Wait, so where does the pizza come in?
Okay. Finally, what broke it for him. My dad had to get rid of it when he broke an axle. The wheels went different directions.
Yeah, that's
completely undrivable.
Okay.
Goodwill at the time, so late 90s, Goodwill at the time had this thing where they would train people on fixing cars. And they usually pay for the car. They offered my dad a token for a free pizza from the local pizzeria. My dad's like, this is a $20 pizza. And, you know, late 90s, $20 pizza was fancy pizza, right? It was some really good pizza. My dad's like, I feel really bad about Goodwill. They're not going to be able to fix that.
So the fact that they paid him with a pizza and towed it, that's an amazing deal. Amazing. Family so the third car I had was called Old Smokey.
No.
This car is a Ford Taurus.
Those things last forever.
Yeah. Can't remember. It was like a 93, 94. And there was a leak in the radiator hose. So whenever I was at a stop, plumes would just like billow out from the engine of the car so thick that I would have to put my head outside of the window to be able to see the light at a stop. Because when I was driving, the smoke would dissipate, and so I wouldn't see it then. But anytime I stopped, you know, it was just smoking like a chimney. And I remember one time I was sticking my head out the window to see when it was going to turn green. And this lady next to me in the next lane next to me was like, hey! And I was like, yes? And she's like, your car is on fire!
Holy
and I'm like,
crap.
Yeah, I know. That's why my head is out of the window so that I don't have to look at it.
And was it actual fire or just steam? Still,
it's steam. It was steam
okay,
from
steam.
The radiator hose, and I replaced the radiator and the hose, but it always smoked like that. And I joined the military, and then Steven, how we know each other through my brother Steven,
yeah,
he drove that car into the ground. That car was not available when I came back out of the military.
If Old Smokey were still around, I have half a roll of very fancy Japanese duct tape that would have put it right back together.
I mean, we tried everything to get it to stop smoking, but Smokey was like, no. No, everybody's going to see me, see the power I have. That was Old Smokey. Car four is the Volkswagen Beetle. I got a 72 Beetle I bought for $700 because I was driving down Main Street and Old Smokey was dead and I needed a car. And but tragically, that car's life ended when I was rear-ended by a semi in that.
What?
Yeah.
What?
The semi was going too fast. It was raining. And so to try and stop from hitting me, he pulled into the left turn lane, but then his trailer swung around and the tire hit me and went through the intersection and totaled the car. That car was truly a great car because the engine was like a lawnmower. It was like running by rubber bands. And anytime it needed to be fixed, it cost me like $6, $30. Like it was awesome.
I have a spare hair tie. We can use it as a belt for your VW Bug.
To get it going. It had nothing. It had no power, anything. I had a stereo in the back seat with a 6 CD loader that I
nice.
Would hit before I started driving. And that was the music for that car. Yeah. It was kind of bungee corded back there. That was an amazing car.
That sounds like an awesome car. Like, and the fewer things you have, the fewer things there are to break. That sounds awesome.
It was an amazing car. And then the fifth car I had, I called affectionately the dyke truck because I would use it to pick up chicks.
Nice.
It just like had, you know, it was my dad's car. It was a 88 Mazda. Steven drove it after I got rid of it. But the brake lines in it were not very great. They were kind of soft. That's not a thing you want with brakes. You don't want to be soft. But when I drove it, it was a dyke truck. And then when it went back to in the family to my brother, it just became a regular truck again.
I think I helped him bleed the brakes on it once.
Yeah, you had to do a lot of brake work on that car. And I think he did get it into a rear end because the brakes were not. There was always something wrong that we couldn't figure out with the brakes on that car.
Gross. Yeah.
And then we had Vomit Car, which was the sixth car. It was a Toyota Corolla, and it smelled like rotten milk and dried puke because I was sick in it all the time. And while I was pregnant, I got morning sickness.
Okay, yeah, because those things are indestructible. I figured if you vomit in it, you're going to be living with that for a while.
Yeah, exactly. So we traded that one out because it was also like the first kid's car, and so there was like also a rotten milk vomit smell. Had to get rid of that one. And not then we good. Had the gray little toaster. We had a Scion XB. That was a very cool square car, but then we gave it up to go carless. And then the eighth car is called the grandpa car because it was an old Buick from my in-laws because we moved to be closer to my in-laws. And then the ninth car was the Mini Cooper. You could call that one the electric storm because after I had a minor fender bender with it, the electrical problems would not stop with that car. Yeah, we had to swap that out. And then I got a Toyota Highlander that was used 2011. That's a great car. That is actually the car my daughter stole from me because she is driving it now. And I let her drive it because I feel like it's a safe car to learn how to drive. And then when I was like, okay, now it's time for your brother to learn how to drive. Give me the car back. She was like, I filled this thing with stickers and all kinds of cool stuff. And I am not giving up on that investment. It is my car now.
Can I share about my second car? My second of three?
Yeah.
I had a Smart 4.2.
What is a oh my gosh, I remember that car. Squeaky with the little tiny smart car. Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, okay. It looked like a pregnant roller skate, right?
Yes.
It was like the default blue and silver, right?
Yes, I remember this car. Okay.
So this car, I did so many weird and irresponsible things with, right? Well, it turns out with just a little bit of ice, you could do a U-turn inside of a parking spot, right? You can get it up to like 30, 40 miles an hour. And if you pull the e-brake while you're hitting the gas, you just whoop, turn it around.
All right. So I got three more cars to go. You ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, so one car, I liked it so much, I bought it twice. This was the BMW i3, and so this was an electric car that I got on a super cheap lease, and then when the lease was up, I had to either give it up or pay $20,000 for the leasing things, and I was like, wait a second, I just want to keep my car. Can't I just keep my car? And they're like, no, you have to pay $20,000 more on the sticker price of this car than if you went to a completely different dealer and bought the same car from them because you had a special financial arrangement with us that had to do with electric credits. If you want to keep this car, you have to pay all the discount that you
got. So you turned the car back in.
So I turned the car back in and then I bought it somewhere else.
Okay.
And then I sold it again in the pandemic when cars were something that people really needed. I was able to make money on that even.
Nice.
Now I am on my 13th car, which is a Volkswagen ID.4, another electric car. I was able to get it with tax rebates from the Biden administration. It has a longer range and it is a bigger car in general, and it does much, much better in the snow than the BMW i3 was a little bit like your smart car. That it was like, did not do well in the snow at all.
My smart car did great in the snow up until I wrecked it. But when I didn't wreck it, when it was just like a little bit in the ditch, it was light enough I could pick up one end, right? I could pick up the front end because the engine was in the back. So it was just like, rah!
So you could self-tow your car. You didn't need a truck. You could just...
For a little ways, not... I couldn't tow it up a hill, but like I could get it unstuck if like just the left wheels were in the ditch. I could be like, lift, tilt, right? And I kept one of those little military entrenching tools in there, right? And I would just like dig it out, pull that snow out from under the wheels, and the whole thing would like topple and slide. It was like a really big RC car.
That's awesome. If you have great stories about your cars, we want to hear them. Email us at athoughtforyourpenniespod@gmail.com and we will share it with others on air.
I am so excited.
Hey there, Penny Thinkers. This is the ad part of our show that you want to skip over, but I don't want you to skip it because I want you to help out people who have survived the LA fires. And we have this link for you, linkcuts.org/LA fires. If you go there, there's a Google spreadsheet that has a ton of different organizations to help out the victims of the LA fire. Would love if you could show your support for our show by supporting the survivors.
I don't know what you said, Shauna, but I wholeheartedly agree that we should help people in the LA fires. So yeah, was that linkcuts.org/LA fires, all lowercase?
Yeah, that is the link, linkcuts.org/LA fires.
Well, I support you think I am fires prevent money donate.
Did I just word salad?
If you didn't, I got lost.
Man, the important thing is linkcuts.org/LA fires. Hey, Hey, everybody. Welcome back to A Thought for Your Pennies, where we try to figure out how to save money together. And I'm your host, Shauna, and this is Squeaky.
Hi, I'm Squeaky, and I like doing multiple things at the same time.
We're so glad to have you with us here today while we talk about how to save money while you're buying a car. And there's lots of different ways that people approach car buying. How do you approach car buying, Squeaky?
Oh, I actually don't have the worst ideas here, right? Like, you can just steal them, you can just... No, okay, I can't humorously talk about buying cars, because I have an actual strategy when I do.
Oh, okay, all right.
I figure out what I need, right?
Okay.
I make a list of what I want, I go find, like, the highest rated for safety or mileage or whatever I'm looking for, right? And I figure out what might be available. When I go to a dealership to buy, I ask the dealer, what meets these requirements? What do you have on your lot? And they'll show me a couple things, and inevitably they'll try to show me some luxury car that doesn't meet my needs. I'm like, cool, not interested. And just very matter of fact, not interested until they show me something that meets my needs. I ask them the price, right? They tell me the price. They try to give me a monthly rate. I tell them, screw that. What's the price?
Mm-hmm.
I take that number. I write it down on a physical sheet of paper. And then I just leave. And he's like, what? You're not going to buy it? I'm like, no, I'm getting information. I go to the next dealership, do the exact same thing. And
wow.
I'm like, here's the price this other dealership offered me. Can you beat that price?
Mm-hmm.
And I keep going from dealership to dealership until I get a number I'm actually happy with, and then I leave with that car.
Buying a car, as we all know, has its challenges. And even more challenging these days is how much more expensive cars have gotten since COVID. This is because there's chip shortages that have slowed down manufacturing of new car inventory, which has led to a higher demand for used vehicles, which causes their prices to go up as well. And things have gotten a little bit better over the last 2 years, according to the research done for this podcast. But finding a good deal is still a lot harder than it was before the pandemic in 2019, because the average new car price is $49,000, and finding a new vehicle under $20,000 is very difficult. It's a seller's market.
Holy crap. Yeah, my Elantra had 6,000 miles when I bought it. But I guess that was 2 decades ago. Now I feel old. You keep making me feel old with these numbers and facts. Why are you doing this to me? I'm going to start shaking my fist at clouds.
I'm sorry to continue to be the face of reality for you, Squeaky, but time has passed. Something else that we wanted to bring up was that the car dealership lobby has made it virtually impossible to buy a car without going through them unless you buy a used vehicle from someone privately. Dealers have perfected their tactics to maximize their profits at your expense. So here are some ways to help you navigate that aggressive, high-pressure sales situation and get the best value possible. I think Squeaky's strategy is probably the nutshell version, but we're going to go into it a little deeper here. You ready?
Yeah, because I don't know that I picked all the right things. There's probably good advice here. I'm probably going to do whatever you're going to say the next time.
Yeah, in the next 20 years. When you buy a car.
I still have a lot of duct tape. It's going to hold together for a while.
I know. So basically, when you're buying a car, there are two approaches, you know, two different things you have to think about. Are you buying new or are you buying used? And buying used is a family strategy that I grew up, where you just buy it used and you drive it into the ground. I think we'll talk about that with the rental cars episode. But yeah, this is...
There's reasons to do that, yeah.
Yeah. But if you're buying new, one thing that can save you money is shop for financing before you go to the dealership. Dealerships hope that you're going to rely on them for financing, but you're not actually required to finance through them. If you show up with your own, you'll have leverage, and let the dealer try to beat the financing you've already been approved for on your own.
Nice. Is it like getting a house where you get like a letter of pre-approval? It's like, hey, I can get a car up to X dollars. How does that work?
So I got my car financing through my bank, USAA, and it was a really easy process through the app where they provided a pre-approval letter for me to give to the dealer and say, I've been approved by my bank, but if you have a better deal, let me know.
Yeah. Okay.
Another thing to think about when buying a new car is how big does this car really need to be? Because most of the market these days consists of SUVs with a lot of added options. Sedans are a little less popular, so you have a better chance of negotiating a decent price if you're willing to size down.
One of my favorite cars was my pregnant roller skate. It was so tiny, it got me exactly where I needed to go, and it had exactly 2 seats. Now, if you have kids, you can either fold them up in the back or get a different car. So,
yeah, I think that's with a family, most people want an SUV or a minivan. And minivans are pretty powerful. I think it's gone the days of like minivan drivers being being looked down upon. Most of the people love the convenience of minivans. And here in Colorado, a lot of people take their minivans and go car camping with them.
Minivans are super practical.
Yeah, amazing. Another thing about how to save money is to be somewhat flexible. You know, build calculators on a car manufacturer's website don't always realistically reflect what dealers have available. So you can get a better price if you're flexible about like color and options. And this was actually something that saved me a lot of money with the last car that I got, in which they wanted for me to get a 2024 VW. And I went to all the forums being like, is there a big difference between the 22 and the 24 VW? And all the forums were like, oh yeah, there's a huge difference because the controls light up and the battery is better in the cold. And I still was like, is that worth $15,000 difference?
Yeah,
so I just went ahead with the 22 and I have not regretted it. I haven't been like, oh no, if only I had the 24, I would be this or that. It was so worth it.
This goes back to the advice I was saying earlier about make a list of your needs.
Yeah.
Right? What do you actually need? What are you actually paying money for? And those needs are going to be different. If you have a 15-minute commute to work every day, your needs are going to be much smaller than someone who's like delivering stuff in their vehicle, driving 6, 7, 8 hours a day. The more you're using it, the more those things are actually going to matter because the more they're going to be a part of your life. Do light up controls matter if you're in your car for a grand total of 20 minutes a day? Probably
right.
not.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah. Another way you can save money, according to Bankrate.com, is thinking about your trade-in. Because if you trade in another vehicle, you can save money as you only pay tax on the difference between the trade-in car value and the new car value. However, if you're trading in, you should negotiate the value of the trade-in separately so that you can see whether you're getting a good value on the trade-in or not.
There is no way that Bankrate is accurately assessing the amount of duct tape on my car. They are going
to
undersell
that. They can't
that.
Know. You lay eyeballs on that to be like,
is
wow,
the best
that is
duct
amazing.
Tape. Premium duct tape.
Well, what to watch out for when you're buying a new car? You ready for this?
Duct tape.
Okay. No, you don't need to watch out for that. That's not on the list here. But what you need to think about is the dealers and how they make their money, because they make most of their profit from financing, trade-in value, and dealer-installed options and accessories.
Okay.
So dealers make their money on financing, so get the financing yourself, on the trade-in value, so make sure that you are looking up a good trade-in value and you're negotiating that. And then the installed options and accessories. So make sure that you're like me, I was like, no, I don't really need the 24. The 22 will be fine. Thank you very much.
But I really need that Rivian tunnel where I can fit a whole barbecue set.
That is amazing. I just don't think that I need that in my daily commute. Like, you know, you're stuck in traffic, boop, whip out the barbecue, just turn it into a tailgate when you're stuck on I-25 out here. I mean, maybe.
I was joking, but now I want one.
I know. See, I'm being very practical. If you've got that feature, you got to be using it on your daily commute, right?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Imagine being like, hey, guys, want to hit up this new burger place? To your coworkers at work, you go out to your car and you pull out.
And you just pull it out of your car and you're like, what now? Right? Sometimes you just make decisions on emotions, and having a barbecue drawer slide out of your truck, emotionally driven decision. So knowing how dealers make money, let's talk about some strategies, right? Once you're in the finance office, dealers will try to add all kinds of items to increase their profit, like a Scotch guard, fabric protection, pinstripes, bodyguards, rust protection, window etching, barbecue drawers, but most aren't worth what they're charging.
And they're not your friends. They're not going to look out for your best interest. They're going to try to get as much money from you as possible.
Well, it's interesting because they try to charge you for like the Scotch guard, and you can buy a can of Scotch guard for $5 and do it yourself. So these add-ons are where the dealer really makes money, and they'll try to push and try to wear you down. So just stay strong and say no. Be ready to walk away. You don't need a car today, right?
Yep. You are buying a list of features. You're not buying that specific car. If they're trying to change your list of features on you, they're screwing with you.
Yeah. And according to Edmunds.com, focus on the out-the-door price. Look for unexpected fees like documents, a handoff fee, and try to negotiate those out.
Yeah. It's really hard, but you can usually ask them for those.
Mm-hmm.
Some places have laws about that. You don't have to sign the paperwork once they put it in front of you. Once you have the piece of paper, write that down. Take a picture with your phone. Go comparison shop. And then if they try to change it, you straight up accuse them of trying to screw with you. People don't respond well to that, and they might give you back the original deal.
Yeah. Well, one of the things from realcartips.com agrees with your strategy, Squeaky, which is don't discuss your budget in terms of the monthly cost. A lot of times dealers will say, well, don't you want this free radio? It only adds $1 to your monthly cost or 50 cents to your monthly cost.
Yeah, that's nothing.
Right. They'll tell you it's nothing. Oh, it's not a big deal. They'll try to steer you back towards the monthly price because there's a lot of different ways that they can package a loan to make the monthly fee a certain amount, such as a longer loan period, which will ultimately result in you paying more for the car. So always bring the dealer back to the out-the-door price and the amount of money that it's really going to cost you to own that.
Yeah, and that's what I meant when it's nothing. The dealer saying this costs you, you know, X per month. Those words are nothing. That is rubbish. That is nonsense. I believe that exactly the same as you'd believe someone trying to sell you a bridge, because it's just a line, right? There's no substance to that kind of promise, because who knows what the interest rate's going to be? Who knows what? Yeah, like you said, terms, right? I can give you a loan for twice as much money for three times as long and have the same monthly payment. That's monthly right. Payment's rubbish.
Yeah, that's a great tip. Another good one, like I said before, was be prepared to walk.
Absolutely.
I didn't know this, but according to Bankrate.com, a common dealer strategy is to make you wait around for a really long time to wear you down, because they hope that after you wait around for a few hours, you will just want to go home and you'll want a car that you'll agree with whatever they put in front of you to sign. That is awful. I've always wondered why it takes so dang long to buy a car, like an entire Saturday, when you already know what you want to get and how much it can cost.
And those jerks will say crap like, let me go double check with my manager. And why would they? Why would they? They're not batting for you.
So another thing about a new car is that once you have the car, you should follow the car manual's guidance for maintenance. So if the manual says change your oil every 10,000 miles, don't let the dealer tell you that you need to do it every 3,000 miles. Do what the manual says. The dealer maintenance package is usually inflated in cost.
Yeah, dealers want to make more money on the service. That said, I am inclined to change my oil more often than I need, because I want my car to last forever, and oil changes are certainly cheaper than getting new financing for a new car.
Yeah, my Toyota Highlander went over 200,000 miles, and my friend has a Ford Escape that she was able to get over 400,000 miles, and she told me the number one thing is getting those oil changes.
My Elantra runs out. The manual, I don't think it goes past 160. So, like, I'm in who knows what territory. I'm just going to get it changed every 3,000 miles anyway, because it's like,
every day with your car is a gift.
Yeah.
All right. So now we've covered all the strategies and things to look out for new cars. Let's go over to used cars. So check the value of the car to make sure that whatever the seller is selling it to you for, it makes sense. And the websites you check are Edmunds.com, Kelley Blue Book, the National Automobile Dealers Association Guide. These are places where you can check the value of the car in your area.
Hang on just a second. Let me try something. I just pulled up my father's car. It's not worth a pizza.
Amazing. I'm glad Kelly's Blue Book knows how many pizzas and cars are worth. That's that conversion for you there. The thing about used cars, too, is that well-maintained cars today should get between 150 to 200,000 miles, so don't let mileage scare you away from a used car. The important thing is that you can see the service records to make sure that it's been maintained properly according to the manual. Toyota and Honda have really great reputations for being cars that run for a long time, but because of that, the value doesn't really drop much for a used one. So think about other manufacturers that have low mileage and have been well maintained. And, you know, a lot of car enthusiasts like European luxury cars, and the price on a used BMW can look pretty appealing, but it's important to know that the reason why these cars are cheap is because their value falls pretty quickly. Their parts are hard to find, which makes their repairs pretty expensive. And that's according to hotcars.com.
Okay, that makes sense.
Well, things you should look out for when buying a used car, you know, there's a lot of things you need to look out for. But one tip we have is that when you're looking at the body panels, make sure they look straight. Like, look at the car from different angles and notice how it's catching the light. Because if there's areas where the body panels don't look straight or the paint doesn't match, that means the car was probably in an accident.
Wait. Does this mean I'm not allowed to sell my car? Because that advice keeps people from buying my car, like, completely.
Unless the person selling you the car is named Squeaky, then it's like, fine. But everybody else, if the panels are a little off, if there's a lot of duct tape, probably has been in an accident.
One of my panels, if you do that where you catch the reflection in the light, you'll see dents that look an awful lot like hail dents. But, you know, in a vertical panel, and I think the driver's side door, and they'll be in the shape of a smiley face.
Okay. That
because
is...
me and my friends at about 10 feet drew smileys all over our cars with paintball guns.
That is your car forever. It's so personal. Every day is a gift with your car. And also, you know, look under the hood, check that all the controls work, and drive it, of course. On a used car, run the VIN number through Carfax and look for any evidence of a rollback on the mileage. Mm. Carfax is not going to catch everything. Sometimes in the transactions from one state to another, the title can be washed. So even if Carfax is clean, you should thoroughly examine the car.
So it's like, it might catch something, but it's not a guarantee.
Right. Avoid salvage titles for cars unless you're extremely experienced. Salvage titles, that means a car has been in a flood or a major accident and incurred serious problems like frame damage and is unsafe. Salvage means the insurance company wrote the car off because the cost to properly repair it exceeded the value of the car, and the chances are it's not going to be worth it for you to fix it.
Okay, that makes a ton of sense.
If you're buying a car through an entity like Carvana, be prepared to take advantage of their return policy. And I did buy my BMW through Carvana, and it was 7 days when I bought my car through them. They're supposed to check the cars before selling them, but they can miss significant things. They'll repair some problems as long as you notice it within that short window, but some repairs may not be covered, like issues with the stereo system that doesn't actually affect the drivability, but you shouldn't be stuck with that. I had a great experience buying with them because I was in a job where I was working a lot and I had no time to waste at a dealership. So it was awesome to go through Carvana, have the car delivered, and it was drivable. That part was a dream. So if you have other ways to save money on buying new or used cars, we would love to hear about it. We'll share it on air sometime together. So please email your ideas to, or things that you've done, to athoughtforyourpenniespod@gmail.com so that we can save money together.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Thought for Your Pennies. I'm Shauna, and this is Squeaky.
Hey, I managed to save 2 pennies, and I'm going to donate them to the survivor of the LA fires.
The one survivor is getting both your pennies. That's so generous, Squeaky.
Oh, that's right. I'll find a few more pennies and donate to the survivors at linkcuts.org/LA fires.
Yep. Helping each other out whenever there are problems is a great thing we should all be doing, even if we can't make it through a simple ad read without laughing.
Hey, everybody, we're back. A Thought for Your Pennies, where we, you and me, the listeners together, try to save money. And we're here with our co-host and good friend, Squeaky.
Hi, I'm Squeaky, and I would like to hear about your car repair tips if they involve duct tape. So send that to athoughtforyourpennies@gmail.com.
Make me
better with my duct tape.
Help Squeaky achieve his dreams of being the duct tape wizard.
I will never live up to red green, but I will sure as heck try.
Well, we're going to talk about scams that can happen when you're trying to buy a car. And this is an expensive mistake if something like this happens to you. And there are a lot of scams out there. So one great resource is that you can check vehicle history at the National Motor Vehicle Title Information System website, which is vehiclehistory.gov.
That is so much easier to say. What even were those letters? You're like, vehicle information history system syndrome archaeology dig it up. Right. Dot.
The abbreviation for it is NMVTIS, the National Motor Vehicle Title Information System. Maybe I just needed to say it faster. Vehiclehistory.gov. This tells you the title, insurance, loss, and salvage info. You can go to a NMVTIS approved provider to get vehicle history report and can include accidents and repair history. These approved providers include AutoCheck.com, Carfax.com, and VinAudit.com.
MVTIS sounds like if you throw it in a Google and turn safe search off, you're going to like run into some real crazy stuff.
Yeah.
What? Nimvitis? What? Sorry.
Nimvitis. Yeah, Nimvitis. Like mantis, but Nimviv instead of mantis.
Sure. Okay.
So one thing to look out for car scams is, of course, the online scam. People posting ads online, an online auction, and sales websites for cars that they don't actually own.
A lot of this boils down to the same scam stuff. If you can't verify it, you have to be careful.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it has to be through somebody that's really reliable if you can't verify it. Ugh.
Right. And so that's what the FTC tells us, is that you should Google the seller and words like review, complaint, or scam.
Makes sense.
Be cautious if the seller is trying to rush the sale, so resist high-pressure sales tactics.
That's just good in general for saving money, but yeah.
Right. Beware of sellers who refuse to meet in person or let you see the car in person.
Yep.
Avoid anyone who asks you to pay with gift cards or wire transfer. That is always, always, always a scam.
I'm going to try to buy a used car with nothing but Apple iTunes gift cards.
And then look up the history report and look out for a VIN that doesn't match the VIN of the car that you're looking at. Another scam.
We need to become fluent in what it means to buy a car. So we have to do research. We have to understand.
Right. We have to understand the art of the scam. So what you need to do is check to see that the car hasn't been recalled. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration website.
My car has been recalled 3 times.
All right, well, look up your car at safercar.gov because that lists vehicles subject to open safety recalls. That means that the manufacturer recalled the vehicle, but repairs are not yet done, and you can enter the vehicle's VIN to find out if a vehicle is subject to an open recall.
I have taken it into the dealership for all 3 repairs.
All 3 repairs?
Each recall got a different repair.
Wow.
So you got to stay on top of this stuff. Some of it, the cigarette lighter would just catch fire if you tried to use the pump that came with the car to pump up a tire. And just tons of people's cars just caught fire.
My gosh.
Nuts.
Yeah.
And I do think my car still has an open recall. Remember those TikToks or Vines? I don't know how old I am now, but where kids would break into cars with a fake beeper thing they made or bought on the internet. My car is totally susceptible to that. But
Squeaky, why would you share that? Why would you be like, just come to my house, steal my duct tape car with the happy face paintballed on the side?
If I gave you my car, would you keep it?
No, I wouldn't give you a pizza for it either. Another thing you need to check is that the car hasn't been declared as salvage. There's a website, the National Insurance Crime Bureau, then that is NICB.org, where you can do a VIN check. And this will tell you whether things like the vehicle's been flooded, stolen, but not recovered and things like that.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
So you just want to be super careful if you get one of these salvaged cars so you know what you're getting into. Probably right. Don't get it unless you're planning on investing in repairing it.
Well, I feel like there's so many things when you're buying a used car that you just have to check and you have to check and you have to check again for a scam. Like you go to vehiclehistory.gov to make sure that the title and any salvage info. You go to safercar.gov to make sure that the car hasn't been recalled. And then you got to go to the NICB.org website and run a VIN check to make sure if the car has been flooded or stolen and not recovered. That is an amazing amount of work to buy a used car and do the due diligence on it. You know, there's scams that go with the physical car, but now I'm going to talk about the scams that can happen with the refinancing or when you're trying to finance for the car. You ready for these?
No, never, but we have to.
All right. So the scam refinancer promises you a lower rate on your car loan, but tells you that you need to make a payment to them first. They'll call it something like an enrollment fee, and this can be hundreds of dollars.
And they just disappear, right? That's what happens next?
Well, the scammer tells you to stop paying your original loan while they negotiate with your lender. They may tell you to pay them and claim that they'll pay the lender on your behalf while they're negotiating. But in fact, they are not renegotiating your loan or paying your lender. They're pocketing your money, and you only find out when the original lender comes after you for non-payment or your car gets repossessed.
Never skip paying on someone else's word. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
If you can't hold someone else accountable, why would you trust them?
Yeah.
Right?
It's
that simple. That's almost all scams.
People look like a legit financial shop and they throw these interest rate numbers at you and you're just like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to trust you and do what you tell me to do until it's too late. So if somebody's trying to guarantee you a lower rate before they run a credit check or anything like that, if somebody's making this claim, they're probably lying.
I am trying not to scream. Wah!
The fact you get so angry that the fact of the world is that there are scams every single time we talk about scams. Squeaky, you're a good person. All right, so if you're struggling to make payments, you can go to your original lender and explain the situation and see if they can make a modification to your loan, or you can see if they'll let you return the vehicle. If you do return the vehicle, be sure to get a letter from them saying that the return of the vehicle satisfies the loan in full. Otherwise, they'll claim that you'll still have a balance.
Oh, gross.
Yeah.
Is that what you get from a lot of those little buy here, pay here places? Just the one dude who's just trying to grift you?
I never buy used cars from those types of places. I usually, just do a one-to-one with somebody who's like, yeah, I drove this car. Here's what I know about it. Here's the maintenance history. I don't do the used car lots unless it's through a dealer and the dealer's like, yeah, this car was a lease and now here it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. That makes sense.
If you are having trouble making payments, you need to be active, though. You can incur penalty fees, hurt your credit, or lose a vehicle to repossession. The longer you wait to figure out how you're making payments for your car, the fewer options that you'll have. And if the car is repossessed, you could end up owing money on top of that for fees for the difference between the amount remaining on your loan and what the lender was able to sell it for.
Oh, yeah. The lenders, they're in the business of taking payments, right?
Right.
And they don't want to just screw you. They don't want to repossess your car. That's what they do when they feel they have no other option. So if you call them and you're like, hey, I can't make a payment, can we do something here, right? Most of them will have options, and it might not be great options, but it's certainly better than repossession.
And you do have some protections on repossession. So know the repo laws in your state, because if your lender violates those rules, they can lose their rights and in some cases have to pay you damages.
That sounds very optimistic. It still feels like that's the kind of thing you need a lawyer but can't afford a lawyer for.
Right. Yeah.
Ooh, okay. Still, knowing you're right, so that's always good.
Right, yeah. But it takes time. And I think the thing that people think about the most when it comes to car buying and a scam, used cars, is lemon laws, right? Which is, if the car is a lemon, this protects consumers when a vehicle has a serious defect that the manufacturer or the dealer can't fix. Consumer protection laws are different from state to state, so it's important to know the laws in your state. States where lemon laws cover used vehicles are California, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, and Rhode Island. And most states cover leased vehicles except for Nevada and New Mexico don't. Alabama and Colorado specifically exclude motorhomes, while other states have a weight limit law that effectively keeps RVs from being covered by lemon laws.
Imagine using a lemon law in a whole freaking house.
Yeah, right?
Like, the motor's bad on my home. Take back my bedroom. What?
And I can understand why Colorado would exclude motorhomes, because there's so many campers out here and they're like, no, we're not messing with whatever you're trying to do. But Kelley Blue Book has information on specific laws for each state. So if you're wondering what the repo laws, lemon laws, Kelley Blue Book is a good place to check it out. And that's what I've got on scams when buying cars. If you know of other scams with financing or buying cars, tell us about it so that we can warn others. Email us at athoughtforyourpenniespod@gmail.com.
And if you have a better lemonade recipe than taking parts from your old lemon and throwing it in a blender with a little bit of sugar, let us know.
Squeaky, no more recipes. Thank you.